from here on in, it really gets grim. For 99% of the people still left at this point, they're possessed with one thing: finishing. They're saying to themselves, if I can be standing at the finish, I've won. And they're right. But for the gifted few, for our 1% that are still competing, that are still racing, they're more than standing. They're wondering, can I catch that guy up there? What about the guys behind me? Are they going to get me? Are they coming on me? Are they picking up on me? Can I get him? Because let me tell you something. This is it. The last hour of this triathlon, on the pavement at 110 degrees, that's when we're going to find out who the hell the Iron Man really is.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We are brought to you by ToughManTry.com, by VeloFix, the world's coolest mobile bike shop, RunCatalina.com. Coming up November 18th, the Catalina Eco Marathon, Half Marathon, and 10K. ATV Swim Spas, the official training vessel of six-time Ironman world champion Dave Scott. Our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we just sent out 2,448 grants, totaling $3.7 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on Babbittville or on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here. Our next guest, only one of our favorite people in the world, one of the greatest female endurance athletes in history, 13 iron distance wins without a loss, four-time Ironman world champion, Chrissy Wellington joins us. Chrissy, how are
you? Hello. Hi. How are you, Bob?
I am spectacular. I miss you.
It's been a long time.
It has been.
It's definitely been a long time.
It has been a long time. So, when you won the Ironman in 2007 for the first time, and here you were, you know, you trying to make the Olympics, right? You're trying to get to the Olympics, and then Coach Brett Sutton says, puts you in Ironman Korea, you win that, you come to Kona, you win that. How did winning the Ironman World Championship change your life, and were you surprised?
I can't believe it's 10 years ago, Bob.
I know.
You know, time passes so quickly, and I think now that it has, you know, the 10-year period is being marked, I'm being not forced to kind of recollect and reminisce on that experience, but it is more at the fore of my mind than it is ordinarily. I went into that race still such a green rookie, just wanting to go in and do my very best. Brett had given me permission to get a time trial bike about 5 weeks before the race, and I got this new set of race wheels. So, you know, putting paid to the advice that I give to people not to try new things in advance. So
of course.
Too close to the race. But yeah, I really went into that race just wanting to do my best, but also I guess my target was to try and get into the top 10.
Right.
I had them, you know, I had other teammates that were racing. Belinda, Bella Bayliss, Bella Comerford, as she was then, Hilary Biscay. So I knew how I was faring against those, but you know, the world championships are an altogether different ball game. So I really was hoping to get into the top 10. That's all I kind of would have expected. That was my measure of success, and really to cross that finish line in first place changed my life.
And you're the type
in so many ways.
Right. And you're the type of person, because of your background working for the government and working in water quality, you're aware of the rest of the world. And you're really one of the first athletes who I've met who understood fairly quickly the platform that being the Ironman world champion gave you. Was that fairly, when you came home from winning that first time in 07, did that sort of, that light bulb sort of go on, going, oh, wait a second, I have a platform now?
Well, it was actually earlier than that. Well, when I was, just to backtrack, when I was training with Brett, within the first few months, I was deeply unhappy. I wasn't really enjoying life as a professional athlete. And I remember saying to him, look, I really don't know how long I can and stick at this. It feels somewhat selfish to me.
Right, yeah.
You know? And I think we all agree that it is, you know,
it's
quite
is.
A selfish, self-absorbed, you know, endeavor. Something didn't sit right with me. And Brett said, well, just you wait. Within a few years, through your physical achievements, you'll be able to affect more change than you ever thought possible. And you draw on the example of Lorna Kiplagat, who's, you know, doing some great work in East Africa with, you know, using her platform to increase physical activity amongst young girls there. And I remember him drawing on that example. I remember thinking, well, actually, maybe I can make a selfish pursuit slightly less selfish through what I may be able to achieve, never believing that, you know, that would take me to four world championship titles. And it was actually when I crossed the finish line, immediately as I crossed the finish line in Kona in 2007, that it hit me, you know, like a thunderbolt, that this was the platform that I'd wanted ever since I was a lot younger to try and drive change. And hence me giving the speech that I did the next day at the awards ceremony. And that's a... It's always been a really important part of who I was as an athlete and what motivated me. I think we're all motivated by different things, and it was that drive to have that, you know, that public platform that pushed me each and every day.
So when you win 2007, 2008, 2009. You come into 2010, and really, for someone to be a champion is winning, but also dealing with adversity. 2010, you're sick, you can't race, right? You're not able to race. So then, in the meantime, Marinda Carfrae has a great race, wins the race, and so then 2011, we're all excited about this matchup, because here you got Marinda, who finished second her first time to you, and then wins, and then you're coming back after not being able to race 2010. 2 weeks out, you have a bike crash, and it wasn't just a minor crash. It was the type of thing that you didn't know, and no one knew if you'd even be able to get to the starting line. Just take me through the highs and lows of just getting to the starting line that year.
Yeah, it was a very challenging period. The preparation had gone really, really well. I mean, preparation for a race never goes perfectly, and I realized quite early on that you can't expect perfect preparation for a race, and nor can you expect a perfect race where everything, you know, goes perfectly. But certainly, you know, I was ticking a lot of the kind of performance boxes leading into Kona, especially with the great result at Roth earlier that year. And it was 2 weeks before, and you know, I won't retell the story, but I did have this bike crash. And of course it impacts you physically. So physically I was very compromised, but psychologically, it, you know, you're riddled with, you know, self-doubt and all of these questions that impact your mental strength going into a race, which is as important as that physical strength. But I have to admit, in a way, although it was difficult, it almost liberated me, because I felt that no one expected me to perform.
Right.
Because I had this body that wasn't, you know, even in 80% shape to compete. People weren't expecting me to win, and that really released a lot of the pressure. So I reevaluated what my goals would be, you know, spoke closely with friends and family, and of course my coach Dave, and basically realigned my goals. And whereas before I'd go into a race and I'd think, actually, I really want to try and win this race. Not guaranteed, but that was my aim, and I just wanted to get the best out of myself, just to go out there and race, and just race and give it everything without the pressure of feeling that people expected me to win. So I wouldn't want to go through that physical discomfort or kind of mental anguish again. But yeah, it was in a way quite liberating as well, and perhaps enabled me to have the performance that I did.
So on that day, you come out of going in again. You had you're over in Hawaii. You have to have the wound scrubbed out a few days before. I remember you telling Tom, your husband, and I don't think husband at the time, but telling him, I don't know, I can't even walk across the room. How am I going to race? And then you have you're further behind the swim than you've been, and you ride up through the field, but you're still really far back. I think Julie Dibbins had 20 minutes or so, and you come off the bike, and then you're having this race. You got Marinda Carfrae, who at that point is the defending champion and having a great race, and you're only a couple of minutes ahead. So you had to run hard. The fact that this wasn't, that you had to dig that deep, that you had to go that hard to win that race, what did that mean to you?
It was a race I'd always wanted. Racing for me was never easy, but I don't think I'd ever had that battle that I'd always craved, that battle within myself and that battle with my competitors, where I was really, really forced to race. And that was something I'd always thought. And you said something previously about, you know, being a champion and what being a champion meant. And I think winning that race, I proved to myself that I was worthy of being a champion. I proved to myself that I could, you know, dig deep when I needed to, and I could fight, and I did have that mental strength, and that was why that race was so fulfilling and so gratifying. And it wasn't the perfect race, but yet it was the perfect race, if you get what I mean. So
exactly.
Not everything went perfectly, but in having that battle and having that fight, it was my own perfect performance. And I knew then that I'd achieved all I needed to achieve, all I wanted to achieve, all I could achieve in this sport.
I think the hardest part for any athlete, when you're at the very top of your game, and you're undefeated, you've got 4 Ironman world titles, you know, Paul Newby Frazier's out there with 8, and it's like, okay, 4 more years. And your career was meteoric. You had just... You came in and dominated, and then when did you have a sense that I just had the perfect race? I had the ultimate race. I was challenged. I dealt with the challenge. I won for the 4th time, and I'm done. How hard was it to walk away?
I realized very quickly that I didn't feel that performance could be beaten. Everyone's measure of success is different. It's a very personal thing. And if I felt I could have gone faster, and I felt I could have won more titles, but it's a constantly moving feast, because as soon as you go 8:18, you want to go 8:19, or then you want to go 8:17 to break the world record. You win 4, you win, want to win 5, you want to win 6. So it's this moving feast. And what motivates us as athletes, regardless of whether we're professional or not, is, you know, that desire to get faster and stronger. But we're never satisfied. We're never satisfied. But that is what drives us, because we always think that you know, we can do more. But as a professional athlete, at some point you have to leave the sport. You have to make that decision, you know. And I felt very strongly something deep inside saying that was the point. That was the point to draw a line and to carve out a new life. And it's a very personal decision to make, and you know, different people will choose different paths. And I felt like I'd had that performance that really defined me as an athlete, and I didn't feel that I could achieve more.
So in a few weeks, you are going to be inducted into the Ironman Triathlon Hall of Fame. And for somebody who has achieved so much in your career, and now you're married and you've got a little one and your life is so full, and you have a new book that we'll chat about in a second. Talk about finding out that you were going to be inducted in the Ironman Triathlon Hall of Fame.
Oh my gosh, what an honor. What an absolute honor. I really can't put into words what it means to me. I received an email from Ironman, from Heather Furr, and it basically said, look, we've got some news. Can you give me a call on this number?
Yeah.
What
they're giving me a start. I'm starting again. I'm racing again.
You're trying to get me to come back and race for the 10th year.
Yes.
My first win. Because the answer is no. and that's when she told me on the phone, which was really nice. It wasn't an email,
right?
Giving me the news. It was a very personal communication, which I very much appreciated. And, you know, I'm not a historian of the sport. I'm not, you know, an avid student of the sport. But I know enough to know who has been inducted into the Ironman Hall of Fame. And it's people that I have the utmost respect for. And I feel incredibly honored to have that accolade. I'm very, very proud. Ironman has changed my life as an event and as an organization, as a company. They've enabled me to do more with my life than I could have ever imagined, and I'm very, very grateful to them for that opportunity. And I feel very humbled to have my name amongst the list of the all-time greats in our sport, and I want to use this this nomination, this induction, as an opportunity to speak about the opportunities that triathlon brings, not to me as a professional, but to people,
right?
And the power of triathlon to really make quite significant changes. So it's hopefully also given me a little platform to speak about that over the coming months, but it really is a huge honor.
So for people in the States, you have a new book out. Your first book, Life Without Limits, was awesome, and I thought you were very honest in there, talking about the challenges you had in your life and in your career to lead to that point. But your new book, To the Finish Line, World Champion Triathlete's Guide to Your Perfect Race, this book is different in what way?
The first book I wrote when I was still a professional athlete, and luckily, you know, wrote the happy ending that,
yes,
that we all wanted in my final race at Kona. But it was the story of my life,
yeah,
and hopefully it was inspirational and motivational for people. However, it was quite light on the tangible, practical training, mm-hmm, advice.
Right.
And yeah, as with many other professional athletes, I receive a lot of emails asking me for tips, for advice, for help on various aspects of training. And I've also written a number of articles and, you know, delivered presentations. And I realized that I have had this wealth of knowledge,
mm-hmm,
and I could either be selfish with that knowledge and keep it inside, or put it all down on paper. So I chose to do the latter, and I created this new book. And whilst it is a triathlon training guide, by name and does include training advice for swim, bike, and run. Hopefully it transcends the sport. It offers advice on nutrition, on strength and conditioning, rest and recovery, race preparation, all important psychology. So the whole spectrum of kind of training body and mind to be the best athlete that you can be, regardless of whether you're a triathlete or not. I mean, very much focused on endurance sports, but definitely not only for triathlon triathletes sure. out there. And whilst the autobiography was quite an emotional book to write, this was an incredibly challenging task to write the second book, largely because I wrote it while I was on maternity leave, so I was juggling it with being a new mum, but also because writing it was only half the battle. The second battle was getting all the design, all the illustrations, the graphics in place, so that not only was it appealing in terms of the text, but and interesting in terms of the text, but also kind of visually engaging, which is what you want a triathlon guide to be. So I worked very hard on that, and then I drew on other contributors such as Dave Scott and my nutrition advisor, Professor Askin Eukendrup, and various others to add their thoughts and their advice and add some color.
Of course, got to have color.
To the book. So I'm really proud of what we've achieved. It is exactly what I hoped it would be, and I really can't wait for people in the US to be able to get their hands on it. It was published in the UK and Commonwealth a couple of weeks ago, so I've just been busy doing a book tour in various cities of the UK, and then we'll head over to the US to promote it there.
And I remember for your first book, and I remember talking to the folks at Rock and Roll and saying, "Hey, you know, Chrissy's got her book out. It'd be really fun to do a Q&A with Chrissy and a book signing." And they're like, "Well, triathlete, we're a running event." And I'm like, "Trust me, you know, the people out there are endurance athletes, and Chrissy resonates." And you remember at San Diego, the line was around the block for you, and then the line at the Brooks tent booth to get autographed copies was around the block. So it was, you have gone beyond sport. People know Chrissy Wellington as not just an elite athlete, but as somebody who gives back to, you're involved with charity, you're involved with women's movement to get the women into sport and get people off the couch. And I think when your book tour comes here, people are going to be very, very excited. When will you be? I know you're doing LA, you're doing Honolulu. And if people want to find out where the tour is going and when, is there a website they can go to?
Yeah, that's the little tour poster being developed at the moment. But like you said, there is a huge crossover between triathlon, between running, cycling, so I mean, as the individual sports.
Absolutely.
And I think we're seeing a lot of people transition from those single sports into triathlon, and likewise, triathletes are doing running events or cycle sportives as part of their training. So it's fantastic, it's fantastic to see that, and that's how our sport will grow, is if we as professional athletes have the opportunity not only to speak to our fellow triathletes, but also speak to runners and cyclists and really promote triathlon as a fantastic, a fantastic new opportunity, a fantastic new challenge. So I hope that I can continue to do that and get my book into those hands and encourage more people to do triathlon. But in terms of the book tour, there's a couple of days in New York on the 5th and 6th of October. Mm-hmm. Then we head to LA on the 8th of October. Then I'll be doing a signing race week in Kona. And then I will head to San Francisco, and we're doing an event in San Francisco on the 25th. Of October.
You were going to be busy.
There's a little bit of a gap between Kona and the sign in San, San Francisco, and myself and my husband and daughter, and I take a little holiday, use that opportunity to spend some time in Oahu. So we're very much looking forward to that. But yeah, the book tour is a fantastic opportunity, yes, of course, to promote my newest piece of work, but also just to engage and to get in front of people and touch them, if that doesn't sound too strange, on a very, you know, personal level, because, you know, over Twitter or Facebook or emailing is one thing, but actually to look people in the eye and wish them luck or congratulate them on an amazing race, that can be really meaningful. So getting in front of people at these events is really, really important to me in terms of kind of engaging with triathlon community and wider.
So we, with our San Diego Triathlon Challenge coming up October 22nd, I'm looking back through old photos, and there's these great photos of Chrissy with some of our amputee kids. You're doing piggyback rides with some of the kids and just being out there for those couple days. And what I always loved about you, Chrissy, is you were always open, right? Always open to tell me how this little sport is impacting other people, and I'm all in. And you came out here, and talk a little bit about that experience for you.
Oh, the San Diego Triathlon Challenge. I wish I could do it. I wish I could do it every single year. You know, Bob, I give, you know, presentations to different audiences. And whilst I change it to suit that audience, there's one image in my PowerPoint presentation that stays the same, and that's of JJ.
Yes.
And the very first time that JJ met me, I think he was 3, and he said, you know, the first thing he said was, Chrissy, do you want to race? And he didn't care that I was world champion. He didn't care that he was 3, and he didn't care that he was a double-legged amputee. And this is what is so inspiring, especially children. The thing I find so inspiring about children is that they don't have a sense of, you know, impossibility. There are no limits to what they can achieve. And JJ kind of epitomizes that. He didn't see a disability in himself. He just wanted to run. And I think the San Diego Triathlon Challenge just brings this whole community together of people that are passionate about sport, regardless of their so-called disability. And that's what's so powerful. And I came away, I've been there twice, and each time I've come away just so inspired. Wow. And if I can take a little bit of their positivity and kind of can-do attitude and carry that with me for the rest of my life, I will.
We need to get you back. Next year is the 25th anniversary.
It's fantastic what you're achieving, not only in the U.S. as well, Bob. It's global now, and you're helping athletes.
Yes.
Around the world. I know that there are athletes here in the U.K. who have really benefited from the support that CAF have provided. So it really is fantastic, and it brings to life the saying that sport does.
Sport changes lives. Changes lives.
Power, yeah, and changes lives.
So cool.
Absolutely.
So, we will see you in Kona in a few weeks, and
I'll be there.
You will be inducted into the Ironman Triathlon Hall of Fame and walking in the parade with us. Hopefully on Tuesday, if you're in town yet.
I'll be at the parade. I think I'm leading the parade. Hopefully
yes, you are. You're the new inductee.
Driving a car.
Yes, you're in a car. You don't have to walk with us other schleppers. You actually get to be in a car. That is so cool.
And then I'll get someone else to drive that car for me. I'm a liability behind.
No, you are a liability behind. I've seen you. So, and then Wednesday night at the Palace, you get inducted into the Hall of Fame. And then the book tour, you've got a lot. And how is being a mom? Is that like the greatest thing in the world?
It's absolutely amazing. And it puts everything else into perspective. It's slightly scary to see some of your qualities in your daughter. You know, I thought maybe she'd be a lot more placid and laid back like Tom, but no, she's fiery and stubborn and knows her own mind like her mum. But no, she's great. We're thoroughly enjoying her. And no, make no bones about it. It's challenging. You know, it's tested me more than Ironman ever did. And that's what's really so amazing. It really is a very big challenge, but one that is so fulfilling and so gratifying. We live in Bristol. There was a Bristol half mass, and then I took her down yesterday, and she's running along by the side, and I'm trying to stop her running out into the road so she can run with all the runners. But no, it's great to bring her up in an environment where, you know, sport is normalized.
Yes.
And it's normal for her to see myself and Tom going out for a run or going out on a bike. And hopefully she'll grow up at least wanting to be, you know, physically active. That's all we can ask for, you know, for her.
So, Chrissy, thank you for always being such a great friend of the show, a great friend of Challenge Athletes Foundation, obviously an amazing ambassador for not just the sport of triathlon, but for the Ironman. And I just, you came into the sport sort of out of nowhere and just grabbed it and have taken us with you. And it's the journey has been spectacular, and it's not ending anytime soon.
Thank you. And I really can't wait to head back to Kona. There's just a phenomenal suite of athletes, female athletes especially, that, you know, I really look forward to watching them race, and it's great to see the sport has progressed and the athletes are doing far better than I ever did in the sport, and that's really what it's all about. It's exciting to watch, and this and a new generation that are coming through, and it's going to be great to be out there and watch them on race day.
Love it. And again, the book is called To the Finish Line, World Champion Triathlete's Guide to Your Perfect Race. It's written by the four-time Ironman World Champion, 13 Iron Wins without a loss, and the latest inductee into the Ironman Triathlon Hall of Fame, Chrissy Wellington. Chrissy, as always, thank you so much for taking time.
Thank you, and I'll see you out in Kona.
All right. Chrissy Wellington has been our guest. We're brought to you by ToughManTry.com, VeloFix, RunCatalina.com, ATV Swim Spas, CAF, and check us out on Babbittville.com or on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here.